Doc Tanner sat chained by the ankle to one of the War Wag's driver's compartment jump seats. Out the undogged front windows, the mountain range ahead loomed larger and larger. The Wag's driver, who was also a captive, a man with frizzy, thinning red hair and a matching beard, was being held at gunpoint by the bit of slime that called itself Vernal. Doc looked at the snake brand on the back of his shaved head, angry red burn marks that had a kind of iridescent, unhealthy sheen to them, and decided they defamed the noble race of Cobra, not because of the crudeness of the rendering, but because of the creature they adorned. Baron Lundquist Zeal sat in the co-pilot's chair, his outlandish high heels propped up on the dashboard, which caused the lapels of his fur robe to slide wide apart, exposing a pair of pale, skinny legs and other, even less attractive appendages. On the road directly ahead of them, appearing and disappearing in the huge cloud of yellow dust it raised, was the flagship of the captured fleet. By far, it was the biggest armored vehicle Doc had ever seen. The Wag he rode in was much smaller, but similar in overall design. Doc had never been inside a military vehicle like this. Everything was strictly functional, without ornamentation. The walls and ceiling were painted olive drab. The upholstery was a lighter shade of the same color, except where it had been patched with strips of silver duct tape. Duct tape also held together the bundles of wiring that followed the I-beams up the walls and over the compartment's roof. Though it wasn't a machine built for the comfort of those who rode in it, they had left their mark on it. It smelled of body odor, cigar butts, and fried onions. Doc's conveyance, like the others in the convoy, was capable of a good head of speed. They had covered 20 miles in about 3/4 of an hour, this over a road that wasn't a road in many places. It often looked more like a stream bed, with small rocks, boulders, and clumps of dead brush on its shoulders. The big Wag in the lead crushed all such obstacles, cutting paths through islands of stunted trees, grinding steep banks to powder. As Doc sat there, hands folded in his lap, he felt the return of a sense of terrible foreboding. He felt like a man traveling to his own execution. After a night of fitful sleep, he had awakened, mentally exhausted, and had discovered his bravado of the previous evening had evaporated. In the light of day, Doc was no longer able to rail at God for not protecting him from random evil. And he was no longer looking forward, with his fine teeth bared in defiance, to the empty peace of oblivion. He feared it. As grim and agonized as his life had been of late, it was, after all, better than nothing. And even now, there were moments when he could recall the tenderness of Emily's caress, the children's laughter at some ridiculous joke. Moments when, even in the horror of this accursed landscape in which he was trapped, he could see something beautiful and be touched in the heart by it. And there was always the hope, however slim, that if he could travel forward in time, he could also travel backward. If he could just find a way to make it happen.
Hey, oldie.
What?
Azili for your thoughts, old man.
I'm sorry.
Hey, you worried about the inbreds, Doc? Afraid they'll have your wigwag for lunch?
Nah, he's not worried, Vernal. Inbreds think he's some kind of big shot, don't they, Doc? Come on, give us the story of your breathless escape one more time. I want to hear it again.
Yeah, Doc. Tell us a story.
I stepped out of the stockpile in the place where the fog with teeth and claws had always appeared to the savages. There were a few of them bent over on the road, employed in straightening a line of white rocks, quartzite, I believe. They saw me at once, and I created quite a stir among their ranks. It seems that I was the only person to ever survive walking that part of the road. They did not know I had simply turned off Hell's Watchdog. Not that they could have understood such a thing anyway. They dropped to their knees as I walked past, lowered their heads in respect, and hid their eyes from my sight. I do not remember the rest of it too clearly. I believe I had to have hit my head inside the stockpile at some point. I know as I walked, I was bleeding from a gash on my right temple. I heard the savages jabbering back and forth at one another. And then they shouted for all the others to come up the road and see me. They said I had stepped from the lair of the spirit in the mist, or lair of the mist spirit, or something of the sort. They said that I was its favored one, as foretold by ancient legend, that I must not be harmed or hindered because I was on its mission. They parted ranks to let me pass down the road. They never touched a hair on my head. I do believe the brutes worship the fog as a god of some kind.
Triple stoops. We're gonna take their god away from them.
Or better yet, feed them to it. You don't have a problem with that, do you, Doc? Would you mind if we killed your little backwards friends?
Either you will kill them, or they will kill you. How the events transpire is of little interest to me, personally. I will be alive or I will be dead, and either way, I will still be here where I do not belong.
Ah, you're breaking my balls, Doc.
Have you ever seen the watchdog, this fog thing, take someone away?
Honestly, I can't recall. I can only remember what my keepers said when they warned me about the fog and told me about the twin orbs. They said nothing could withstand it. They said no armor could keep it out if it wanted in, and that nothing could stop it once it was in motion. Like a storm, it has to run its course.
Oh, so the stones won't stop it? I thought the stones would stop it.
I can keep it from being released. I can keep it caged with them, and I can drive it back into its cage when it first appears. But I cannot make the beast retreat once it has smelled blood. It is in its nature to behave in a certain fashion, like a living creature. The White Coats programmed it that way, you know.
Show me the stones again.
Doc opened his fist.
Oh, amazing.
The Baron looked as if he was almost ready to reach out and touch them, but then he thought better of it and drew back.
Don't drop them. Your life depends on it.
That wasn't news to Doc. Ahead, the huge wag had reached the foot of the entrance to the mountain pass. As it started to climb the grade, it slowed. Doc could see the vent hatches being closed and dogged, getting ready for war.
All right, everybody. Dog the hatches. Take your positions. Trader's four-eyed armory buddy told me all about this baby, and we're going to see what it can do.
When Trader looked aft, down the side corridor, he saw one of Shabazz's men climb up into the machine gun blister on that side. Along the middle of the connecting hallway, three others were getting in position at the armored gun ports. They each had M16s that they had looted from Warwag 1's onboard armory. Also on the deck, set in the racks made expressly for that purpose, were open boxes of preloaded 30-round magazines. The pirate crew braced themselves as Shabazz lumbered up the grade, taking the first hard bend in the road. Everything was bathed in red light.
Oh, sounds like their blasters can't touch us in here. These inbred fuckers are in for a world of hurt. Yeah, they're definitely gonna have to do better than that.
Shabazz turned the wag's yoke back the other way to take the next turn in the road.
That was just a warning.
Yep, just a kiss hello. A peck on the cheek to let them know they were there.
Don't they know that? We just gonna sit here and wait for them to fuck up and get us all chilled?
Nope, we'll get our chance.
Through the side viewports, Trader could see that the road was quickly narrowing until it became for the MCP what amounted to one lane. There was a ribbon of pavement on either side of its wheel skirts, and the pavement ended in sheer rock walls. They rounded the bend.
Hey, you guys got a comm unit on this thing? I need to go wag to wag. We got inbreds on the road up ahead. They're the ones blasting at us.
It's right in front of you, you stupid bastard.
What's that?
Mike's hanging on a clip above your seat.
Oh. This is Shabazz in the lead wag. Fire at will, you gunners. Don't wait for a signal from me. Just fire at will. You see any of the scumwads skulking around out there, you chill them dead.
Burst length is way long. They're gonna burn out the RPK's barrel mighty quick.
Yeah, kinda gets your hackles up, doesn't it, JB?
Yeah, it does.
Mine too.
Hey, buddy! This button for the 20mm cannon?
Yeah, sure is.
All right, then. Yeah! Man, I nailed three of the bastards. Oh, you should have seen them fly, Trader. In chunks!
You shouldn't be wasting those right now. These guys obviously don't care for this low stretch of road. It doesn't even seem like they're trying to hit anything, just making us think they're attacking us.
You think they might be playing cat and mouse?
More like just leading us to a mouse trap.
I really don't like the sound of that.
Hey, Trader! Come here! I want to show you something funny.
When Trader leaned down next to the driver's seat, Shabazz pointed out the obslit.
See those cuts across the road way up the hill? Those are the ditches that stopped our wags before. Not gonna stop this monster, though. We're gonna hop their ditches like they were nothing. Watch!
Trader had to admit that the anti-tank traps looked too shallow to be much of a threat to any of the war wags.
What the hell is that?
Everything shifted nose forward. The front end of the MCP was dropping, and kept dropping.
Oh, shit! Fuck, where's the reverse?
All the red lights dimmed for a second, then they came back up. Trader estimated their downward angle to be about 40 degrees, which told him the back half of Warwag 1 was still hanging on the edge of the collapsed roadway.
Sons of fucking bitches! Reverse! Reverse! Come on, goddamn, back the fuck up!
Every drive axle torquing, the rear end of the MCP slipped around on the lip of the ditch, but didn't move backward so much as an inch. Shabazz tried again, revving the engines to redline before dropping the transmission into reverse. Trader could see that the man was close to panic. Shabazz knew just how desperate the situation was. The MCP's weapon systems were unaimable, stuck either pointing down in the hole or up in the sky. Its vast bulk was immobile. It wouldn't be long before the Guardians had their way with them. Despite his efforts, the big wag stayed right where it was.
Shabazz, get that piece of shit out of the way! The bastards are gonna overrun us! Fuck, crap! Zeal, we're stuck in an ass fucking tank trap! You're gonna have to back out, back down the pass! Hell no! We're not gonna retreat, not after all this! We're going forward! You're gonna have to get out of there! Traitor, this wag can get out of here?
Sure can.
How?
It's easy. Disengage the secondary safety catch for the cat tracks, drop the gears, transfer power from cells 2 through 4.
Let Trader drive, Shabazz! But Zeal, I... Oh, fuck, shit! Come on, do it! Drive this hunk of metal, you fucking bastard!
In no particular hurry, Trader took the helm. He pointed at the stub of a cheroot stuck in the corner of his mouth.
First, give me a light.
You son of a bitch!
Thanks.
What are they doing?
Boulders. They're rolling boulders down on us. Not quite what I would do in their position, but then again, I wouldn't have let this wag get this far.
What the hell is that sound?
That's the trench. Now, let's get out of here.
With the rear cat tracks down, getting out of the ditch was a piece of cake. As Trader backed up, the nose end lifted out of the trap, and the front wheels rolled out onto the road.
Alrighty. Now what?
Outside, Palmer rose from his rock bunker. He waved First Palmer's flag to the rest of his clan. It was the signal for the final trap to be sprung. From 4 widely separate positions, 2 on either side of the cliff, clansmen using long wooden levers pried free the keystones that held massive cliff-edge rockfalls in place. It was enough rockfall to block the road from shoulder to shoulder, and to crush or cripple anything that stood upon it. The Palmers had spent many difficult days moving the heavy stones into place, balancing the piles just right. Now, at almost the same instant, the piles were freed.
Yes! Crush the attacker! Bury the assaulter! Make this its grave! A marker to the world! This is what happens to all who dare resist the spirit!
A massive cloud of dust rushed out and up from beneath the outfall, and as it boiled, it concealed the roadway from view. When the wind from the peak swept the dust away, Palmer the Guardian could see that the trap had worked. The largest of the war wags, the lead wag, was hemmed in on all sides by giant boulders. They climbed its flanks and squatted on its breastworks. The smaller wags were less covered by rockfall, but equally trapped, either because of the load on the road, or because the other vehicles blocked them in. With another wave of his ragged red, white, and blue pennant, Palmer ordered his clansmen to do the deed, according to their revered progenitor.
Now is the time for chilling!
Caught between the competing torrents of stone, Baron Zeal's wag had been savaged left and right by violent twisting shocks. Dust swept in through the open air vents, through the gun ports and obslits, a choking, swirling mass so thick that after a few seconds, it blocked out the red interior lights. No one saw the lights fade out. There was no way a person could keep his eyes open in the stinging maelstrom of grit.
Somebody turn on the fans!